You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our readings today are from Isaiah and from Julian, both of whom were writing in the midst of the kinds of catastrophe that it's hard for most of us to imagine enduring. Anyone who's heard Handel's Messiah before will recognize our passage from today, and along with Handel and many other Christians, will have likely been seduced into thinking it is a prophecy predicting the coming of Jesus. However, when the material is read in its 8th century historical context, it's clear that the prophet is referencing the king Hezekiah and his efforts to restore the temple. It was a turbulent time for the Jews. The juggernaut of the Assyrian Empire had already destroyed Syria, leveled the kingdom of Israel, and had its sights set on the kingdom of Judah and Jerusalem next. Hezekiah was trying to avoid what turned out to be an inevitable tragedy for his people. Where our reading from Isaiah is part of a diatribe that clearly says, your bad behavior has brought this crisis down on you, our reading from Julian is urging almost the opposite, reminding people that trouble and distress are not punishment from God, but acknowledging that trouble is inevitable. So just remember, whatever comes, God is with you.
Our words of wisdom are from Isaiah chapter 9, verse 2, and Julian's Revelations of Divine Love, chapter 68. Isaiah 9, 2. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light, and those who lived in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shined.
And these words, you shall not be overcome, were said very distinctly and very powerfully for assurance and comfort against all the tribulations that may come. God did not say, you shall not be perturbed. You shall not be troubled. You shall not be distressed. But said, you shall not be overcome. To give us confidence and comfort for whatever troubles may come. For God loves us and delights in us. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
He was only in the 8th grade. His father was a football coach at the University of Wisconsin, and his older brothers were high school football stars. In a family where physical prowess and courage were celebrated, Matthew Fox was told he would never walk again. A spinal tap confirmed it. At 12 years old, he had contracted polio, and only 1 year before the polio vaccine was invented. He spent months in the hospital contemplating having lost his legs and that reality's implications for the rest of his life. The mystics have a name for this kind of bad news, the via negativa, the negative way, acknowledges the reality of suffering, of death, of not being in control, and maybe worse than anything, of not knowing. Pandemics, be it Julian's or ours, are concentrated doses of via negativa. Without exception, they are times of profound darkness, the darkness of not knowing when it will end, and if it ends, will it return? The darkness of not knowing who is carrying it and transmitting it. The darkness of not knowing the long-term consequences. And if medical science provides a vaccine, how effective will it be? How will it be distributed? Will I be able to afford it? Will those with limited resources be excluded? Will people trust the science? But there's also the darkness of and being overwhelmed by the knowing. Knowing that at the height of our pandemic, suffering and death was all around us, and there was little to nothing that we could do except isolate ourselves, wear masks, and be as supportive of essential workers as possible. The burdens placed on hospitals, morgues, grocery stores, first responders, parents, teachers, and the psychological impact of being locked down created and still creates anxiety, fear, and a deep sadness. Julian acknowledges such struggles and hardships draining us when she writes, "Sometimes we experience such darkness that we lose all our energy. Depression born of unexamined darkness robs us of the ability to be motivated to do almost anything, especially anything spiritual." And another reality that the darkness of a pandemic drives home is the painfully obvious but often ignored fact that life is short. If, when we come face to face with that harsh reality, we're able to function at all, there's an increased chance that we become less preoccupied with the trivial. We may even be motivated to ask deeper questions like, what do I want to do with this short life? What's the best contribution I can make given the gifts I have and not knowing how long I will live? Julian says it's simple. Strip everything down to the one essential question. Why am I here? Examine your goals and intentions and ask yourself, what goal or whom do I wish to serve? But let's face it, these are not the kinds of questions most of us are likely to ask unless faced with an existential crisis, be it personal or global. In both Fox and Julian's cases, they were confronted with dramatic moments when they resigned themselves to the fact that their lives were over. And in both cases, this confrontation with the reality of darkness and death changed their lives. After months in the hospital, Fox received the unexpected news that, with much hard work, he would indeed be able to walk again. He was overwhelmed with the news and, from that moment on, vowed that he would never take his legs for granted again. Fox's teenage via negativa experience of losing his legs, only to regain them again, taught him a profound lesson in gratitude and reverence for the gifts of life most of us take for granted. And that's one of the great gifts of darkness, or the via negativa. But as both individuals and as a culture, we resist the gifts of darkness. In fact, we are so resistant that we'll go to almost any lengths to not acknowledge them. Our tools of choice, denial, and addiction. Julian's first lesson about the darkness is to face it for what it is. Whatever you do, don't give in to denial. Don't numb reality with addiction. Put truth first. Go into the dark, even the darkest of the dark. Go into even the dying. Unfortunately, these are not popular ideas in the 21st century. In fact, we tend toward just the opposite. We run from bad news. We cover over the facts. We seek refuge in addictions that numb our feelings and dull our capacity to respond creatively and effectively to the hard realities at hand. As we speak, our whole society has become addicted to alcohol and painkillers, artificial means that, as psychologist Ann Wilson Chafe says, keep us unaware of what is really going on inside us. We don't have to deal with anger, depression, confusion, or even our joy and love because we simply no longer feel them or feel them only vaguely. Then there's denial, itself a form of addiction. The power of the human imagination to live with our heads in the sand is proof of our skills of self-deception. Few issues have had the ability to generate self-deception than the reality of climate change and what some scientists call global weirding. Droughts are getting worse. Wildfires are unprecedented in size and frequency. Hurricanes are getting more powerful, and weather patterns are shifting. Farmers in the UK are growing wine grapes that until recently could only be grown in France and Spain. When we visited the Galilee in 2019, we were surprised to see that the dominant crop surrounding the northern end of the Sea of Galilee is bananas. Weather phenomena are confounding climatologists. After a deadly storm tore through Nepal recently that spawned the country's first ever recorded tornado, a local meteorologist said, "We don't even have a Nepali word for tornado." And yet the denials continue. It's not our fault. But not to worry. As Rabbi Rami Shapiro writes, it turns out Earth is going to be just fine. Sure, she's going to wipe out most humans with raging fires, rising seas, and one pandemic after another as prehistoric diseases are liberated from their melting permafrost prisons. But that too is our fault. No use getting upset over something we decided to do nothing about. Nothing, that is, other than haranguing one another over doing nothing about it. The future of Earth's thriving will depend on freeing herself from the kudzu that is humanity. And we can witness that happening all around us. Yikes! Is Earth itself conspiring to do us in dark enough for you? Or are you in denial? You know, sometimes reality's a hard pill to swallow. But that's what Julian would have us do. Don't run from the pain or diminish its deepness. She dared to face the dark head on. She even prayed for it to awaken her. She embraced the pain and uncertainty and held on for dear life to learn what it had to teach her. That is the gift of the via negativa, the gift of facing the darkness. Author Vince Gaumann writes that, like a tree, you rise into the light only as far as your roots will take you, as far as you're willing to immerse yourself into the medicine of the dark, tear-soaked soil beneath your feet. We're not just talking about the trauma of our own lives. As individuals and as a culture, we're weighed down with heartbreak, loss, suspicion, isolation, and grieving, and are in denial. The mistrust and demonizing of one another over race and history is gnawing away at us, in large part because we've refused to face the reality of who we are. Comedian Trevor Noah says that it's much easier and less confrontational to talk about race in his home country of South Africa than in the U.S. Why? South Africans intentionally faced the darkness of their past through the painful experience of a thorough Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Life in South Africa isn't perfect, but they had the courage to be honest about their history and what its implications are for their collective future. The U.S., on the other hand, acts like some trust fund frat boy whose daddy always bails him out of trouble. Who, me? I've never done anything wrong. How dare you suggest otherwise? Shallow so-called patriots are outraged. Outraged, I tell you, if anyone dares suggest that the U.S. is anything but perfect in every way. A number of years ago, Bill Moyers was interviewing the poet Robert Bly and suggested that America has never really come to terms with the shadow of its past, namely slavery, the genocide of Native Americans, and the Civil War. Bly agreed and theorized that our country's inability to mourn, a whole people unable to grieve, unable to be honest about the darkness, is the cause of much of the unresolved anger, racism, and hatred festering in the hearts of many Americans. Author Julie Peters reminds us, our darkness has value. Whether we're brokenhearted, jobless, fearful, or depressed, the darkness asks us as individuals or as a culture to pause and listen to what our bodies or the body politic may be trying to tell us. Julian acknowledges that sometimes All our frailties and feelings, our betrayals and denials, our humiliation and burdens seem to utterly fill the horizons of this life. People are afraid that goodness will be forgotten. But Julian doesn't look away from the pain and the suffering. She knows that joy and healing are only possible if we face our darkness. James Baldwin says, "Not everything faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." Look, I get it. Facing the dark is a hard sell for those of us who have been seduced by the American cult of happiness and prosperity. Even our language reflects a bias against darkness. Going to a dark place is associated not with potential, but with negative emotions. Being in the dark is about ignorance, not wisdom. We'd rather be enlightened and keep it light, hanging out with bright people. We've lost touch with the gifts of darkness. Julie Peters continues, "In the dark, we can't rely on our sense of sight to tell us what's ahead. We instead have to feel and listen carefully to what's around us. The world comes much closer into the here and now rather than where we're going to go next. A part of being in the dark, literally and metaphorically, is not knowing what's coming next, not having a clear vision for which direction we should go. Darkness asks us to slow down, listen, feel for what's around us, tap into our bodies. We can make better decisions about the future when we can understand the present. Learning to sit in the darkness takes courage. It teaches us that we are brave enough to face almost anything." That's what Julian was on about. In chapter 68 of Revelations of Divine Love, Julian recalls that the words, "You shall not be overcome," were said very distinctly and very powerfully for assurance and comfort against all the tribulations that may come. God didn't say, "You should not be perturbed, you should not be troubled, you should not be distressed," but said, "You shall not be overcome," to give us confidence and comfort for whatever troubles may come. For God loves us and delights in us. Fox brings Julian's wisdom into the present and reminds us that the experience of the dark night is a deep wake-up call. Whether it comes at us from climate change or coronavirus or failures of politicians or the destruction of ideals of democracy or failures of religious promises or personal pain or combinations thereof, there's plenty to grieve. The dark night knocks loudly on the doors of our souls. Now is not the time to try to get Julian to say, "Oh, you poor thing, all the difficulties you've got in your life." Instead, Julian says, "All the difficulties you've got in your life, what an opportunity." I think she would have approved of this meme that's been going around the internet that I'll leave with you as a stream of thought. "I asked for strength, and God gave me difficulties to make me strong. I asked for wisdom, and God gave me problems to solve. I asked for prosperity, and God gave me brawn and brain to work. I asked for courage, and God gave me dangers to overcome. I asked for patience, and God placed me in situations where I was forced to wait. I asked for love, and God gave me troubled people to help. I asked for favors, and God gave me opportunities. I received nothing I wanted. I received everything I needed. My prayers have been answered." Even in the midst of the bad news, even in the throes of darkness, Julian implores us to not lose touch with the goodness of life and of nature. Even in the most dire of situations, joy is still a part of the big picture, but it requires facing the facts, resisting the urge to sink into denial and addiction, and embracing the gifts of darkness. Writing in the same century, but continents away, the Persian poet Hafiz observed, "I wish I could show you, when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being." The astonishing light of our own being, of our own potential, of our wholeness, hinges on our ability to overcome our fear and anxiety, and with Julian, face the darkness. All will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.